Thank you.
The next case that's going to be argued is Stanitsky versus Voits versus Progressive Direct Insurance Company and versus Voit.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Scott Neely, and I represent appellants in this case, and I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time. Okay. Your Honors, the district court below had discretion, and it had an obligation under Rule 23E and under Bluetooth, and cases following Bluetooth, to carefully scrutinize the settlement for subtle signs of unfairness in distribution between what Progressive had agreed to pay between class counsel and the insured. As just Judge Gould recently wrote an opinion, this is to smoke out potential collusion between the defendant and plaintiff. In this case, there was no collusion.
There also, counsel, was no true common fund. It was a maximum. It wasn't a fund on behalf of the plaintiffs. And it could have been anything. It could have been $1 million, $10 million. It didn't matter because all that money remained in the possession of the defendant unless and until there were valid claims. So why isn't the district court's approach reasonable?
The district court's approach is contrary to Bowles. Bowles specifically addressed that issue as a matter of Washington law. Bowles was not a segmented fund. The argument made by the state of Washington and Bowles in 1993 was there was not a segmented fund. It would be funds paid in the future. There was a calculation made of what the amount was, and Bowles specifically said as a matter of public policy that they would apply the common fund and apply it to that amount.
But Bowles also says that the touchstone is always reasonableness, that there's yes. discretion, and that although the percentage of recovery is favored, it's not. I didn't read it as saying it's required without regard to the circumstances.
Well, and that's correct. But what Bowles says is that you have a reasonableness standard which goes between 20 and 30% of the fund. And you use that. And Bowles specifically says you do not look at what the district court did, which is in essence the lodestar. You don't
well,
say.
Well, the court didn't use it as the method. It used it as a check.
Absolutely.
Which is not forbidden by any Washington case that I could find.
Well, but the result of using it as a check, okay, was to give a 5.75% fund. Which is
That's only if, you're sort of assuming the answer by doing that because the question really is whether the fund is the amount that was paid out or the fund is this hypothetical number.
Okay. But every case, Williams was exactly that fact. That was the facts of Williams. That was also the facts of the case Waters from the 11th Circuit. Williams had a settlement term that the fund was $4.5 million. This court specifically in Williams said that you didn't use a percentage, you didn't use the claims made. Why? Because the defendant agreed that the settlement fund would be $4.5 million.
Well, it was more than that. Here, there was also, I think, reasoning that there was more of an agreement about how the fee would be done. And here, the only agreement is that it was noted that you would ask for fees, not that you would receive them.
Well, and there are several different situations, Your Honor, and I think it's important to recognize the distinction. You have a situation where there's unfairness and you're doing a Bluetooth analysis. The court in that case rejects the settlement so that the class gets the money. Then you have a situation where the parties have agreed on what the fund is, And in this case, it's based upon the actual amounts that were recoverable. There's a mathematical calculation based upon a sample.
It's still entirely hypothetical. Well, and that money was not paid out.
But, Your Honor, every single solitary case is like that. Very rarely these days do you have a segmented fund. There's no case that says you have to have a segmented fund. Bowles says it doesn't matter.
Well, there's also, as I see it, no Washington case that forbids what the district court did here.
Well, but what Bowles says you have to do is you have to use a percentage of the fund analysis between 20 and 30%. You can deviate from that. But the fee here was 5.75%. And Bowles itself cites this court's decision in Six Mexican Workers, which says that you calculate the fund based upon the amounts that are recovered and the amounts that could be recovered. So Williams was not a decision that came out of left field, Your Honor. Williams follows Six Mexican Workers. And the public policy issue here, which is basically to say, gee, do we not want to allow claims-made settlements? Do we want to allow courts to just have free rein to cut fees in claims-made settlements? That was the issue in CAFA.
It's not a question of cutting. It's a question of establishing.
Well, but the establishment of a fee is, at this point, Your Honor, once there's no longer a Bluetooth issue, it's a question of what the parties agreed to, as Williams says, what the defendant agreed they would pay up to. And then it's a question of following Washington law. They agreed to pay up to 26% of a $19.1 million fund. That's what the settlement agreement says, and it says we will request it, and that's what the class was told.
What do you think that virtual means in the settlement agreement?
Virtual means exactly what it is. It's a calculation of the amounts, just like in Bowles, that can be recovered under the settlement agreement. I've been doing this practice, Your Honor, for 25 years. I have never seen the defendant in a claims-made settlement stick the money into an escrow account. And it doesn't ultimately matter as to what the class recovers or what the defendant pays. So unless the argument is that the fact that it's claims made, you can always start looking at what the take rate was, despite the fact the parties agreed as a matter of private contract that was the fund, despite the fact that Williams says that's how you look at the fund, despite the fact that this issue went up and it was addressed in the Waters case, where Justice O'Connor at the U.S. Supreme Court said, we're not going to look at this issue. Why? Because the defendant agreed to pay up to that amount of money.
What effect, if any, in your view, does the recent Lowry case have?
It has no effect, Your Honor, and let me explain why. The Lowry case was very careful to say there is a footnote in the Lowry case where it specifically addresses Williams. And that footnote says the difference and the reason why Williams does not apply is because in this case, the settlement agreement specifically said that the plaintiff will not argue that the amount listed is the fund. So the settlement agreement in Lowry specifically said in the court.
Well, the settlement agreement in Williams differed from the one here as well, because it specified that there would be fees based on the entire $4.5 million fund, which is a little different, I think, than what happened here.
No, that is exactly what the settlement agreement says here, Your Honor. If you look at the settlement agreement and the notice, the settlement agreement says, quote, and I'm quoting, Your Honor.
What page are you on?
I'm quoting from paragraph 33. It's 2ER172. It says, quote, paragraph 33, settlement fund means the virtual common fund of approximately $19.2 million. And then there's a footnote that says, this figure represents the market value
right,
of the vehicle.
That doesn't say anything about fees.
Paragraph 51, which is at paragraph 51, Your Honor, which is at ER 180, says, quote, attorney's fees and costs were not negotiated between the parties until then. It
that's
says class
the difference
counsel.
That's the difference from Williams
okay.
Right there.
No, no. Okay, but wait a second. Well, no, I don't think there's a difference that the consul didn't negotiate. You can't negotiate a fee until you've agreed on what the class is going to get. That's black letter law. So that, you know, that's what happened in this case. But what it says in the important language is, quote, class counsel will not ask the court for attorney's fees in any amount beyond 26% of the settlement fund, which is a defined term. So you can substitute in $19.2 million there. That's what the settlement agreement says. And the notice to class members, there were no objections. There wasn't even an opt-out. In 28,000 notices says, quote, and this is at 2 ER 196, it says the settlement will provide up to $19.2 million to pay claims of those who properly submit claims. It tells people that they will receive 5.4% of their actual cash value. That is the 7.4% minus 27%. So that's counting for a 26% fee. And then it says, how will the lawyers be paid? That's ER 226. Class counsel will ask the court for attorney's fees and expenses up to $5 million. So there is no doubt in this case that exactly as in Williams, we had a defined amount of the settlement fund. We had an agreement, because you have to under Washington law, ask for it as a percentage of the settlement fund. And we don't have some, if there isn't unfairness to the class, and there wasn't, this settlement was a plain vanilla settlement.
Well, do you seem to be suggesting that the district court was obligated to accept what you had agreed to?
No.
But that seems to be your argument, as I listen to it.
I want
to
be
because the district court always has the right to step back and to ask whether or not the amount of attorney's fees is reasonable in light of the entire litigation.
Okay. Well, there's two things the district court has an obligation to make sure that there isn't. Progressive agreed to pay a certain amount
yes.
of money, in essence. Okay. And if that
up
money
to a
up
certain
to
amount.
Exactly. Well, they agreed to pay up to a certain amount in fees, and they agreed to pay claims, mm-hmm. so they had a certain exposure. If that too much of that money is going to class counsel, then the settlement has to be rejected. It has to be looked at more carefully to see if it needs to be rejected, because that money needs to go back to the class. Okay, that's Bluetooth.
Right, that's okay? not this.
That's not an
right,
issue.
I,
exactly.
I'm not.
So once that happens, okay, once there is the class counsel, a class is getting treated fairly. It's a private settlement agreement between the parties. And this is where it comes in. If we had requested a fee mm-hmm. that did not comply with Bowles, that did not comply with Washington law, the district court would have every right to reject it.
It wasn't a question of rejection. You keep talking about yeah. rejection. The court sets the fee. And
yes.
Bowles, there was an actual benefit to everyone because the pension benefits went up for everyone. There was no virtual anything. So it's quite a different situation.
Well, let me say two things. First of all, I think Williams has addressed this, and I think that Six Mexican Workers has addressed this issue directly. Binding precedent.
Yeah, but
Six Mexican cited.
When you're responding to my question, you said you'd reached this agreement, but that what you're suggesting is that the district court was obligated to accept it.
Okay, and let me.
I don't think that's right, because you tell the class that you're going to apply to the court for an award of fees,
okay.
which suggests, rightfully so, I think, that the district court will make that determination.
Okay, well, but there's a difference, Your Honor. And there are cases. We cited, the district court cited Judge Mehta's decision in the district court in D.C. Strong from the 11th Circuit, the case that the Waters refused to follow. Both of those are cases where the fee agreement didn't talk about a method of calculating the fee. It didn't have an amount of a settlement fund. It left it up to the district court. Mm-hmm. If it was left up to the district court, we would not be sitting here. Okay. The question is, though, we have an agreement between parties, private parties, that does not impact the class, that complies with Washington law. Now, what the district court then has is discretion to look at this in the conjunction of Bowles. And if the district court thought that a 22% fee or a 23% fee was appropriate and justifies that for some other reason than the justification that was used, which is this case was in the middle of class certification when it was settled. It was only litigated for a year and a half. I mean, that is the only justification in the record for cutting the fee. Okay? It's because the case had only developed to
setting
a certain point.
Setting the fee where she said it,
yes.
Not cutting.
Well, okay. Well, there's a,
I mean,
there's
that,
a range.
That, you know, your choice of wording reflects, I think, what Judge Pius is suggesting, that you think that is how it has to be, and anything less that the district court did is cutting or somehow, not being the entity that is charged with setting an appropriate and reasonable fee in the first instance.
I guess I would say that under Bowles, a 5.75% fee based upon the party's settlement agreement is well outside the range, and the only justification
but under
for
Bowles,
that deviation,
the percentage was of actual benefit to the class members, not virtual benefit, because everyone in the class was going to get that increased pension, and not just
to the
15% of the class.
But this court has already determined that issue in Waters. If this court believes that Washington would reach a different conclusion on this, then it should certify that question to the Washington State Supreme Court. This court Washington's either going to follow Williams, and it's going to follow, it's either going to follow Williams, and it's going to follow Six Mexican Workers. In fact, Bowles cites Six Mexican Workers. It's either going to do that, in which case the judge, I think, deviated from what would have been a 20 to 30% range, and did so on the basis of in essence, a lodestar analysis. Bowles says you don't do that. Bowles actually cites authority that says we want people to be paid adequate fees, so these cases are bought. It cites Newberg, who makes the point, as does the Manual for Complex Litigation, that you want to encourage people to settle early. You don't want them to run up the lodestar. As a matter of public policy, Washington doesn't want you running up the lodestar. These courts don't want you running up the lodestar.
They also don't probably want manipulation of the settlement fund amount by when you know that there might be, $50,000, you can call it, we'll set aside $5 million or we'll set aside $25 million. That's manipulable as well.
With due respect, that issue was exactly what CAFA decided. Congress addressed this very issue in CAFA. And they didn't say you couldn't use claims-made settlements. They didn't discourage claims-made settlements. They said that you couldn't use coupons. And this court has been very careful. What we've done is we've taken the analysis for a coupon settlement where Congress spoke, and we're now moving it into claims-made generally. I think by negative implication, Congress knew what the issue was. They didn't decide to address these more generally. And so I agree, the district court has discretion, but that discretion is consistent with Washington law. And Washington law requires between 20 and 30%. And if the downward deviation here was because the case was only pending for a year and a half, that itself is inconsistent with Bowles. It's a lodestar. So I agree, Your Honor, that she had discretion, but it's within the discretion of Bowles. If you are correct, and Washington would reach a different conclusion than Waters and Williams and Six Mexican Workers, which they cited, that is an issue you should certify to the Washington State Supreme Court. You ought to ask, does Bowles apply in the context of a settlement that is claims made? Now, I think this court's already answered that. And in fact, the district court recognized it. She just found that she literally said that Williams was no longer good law.
Counselor, I'm reticent to interrupt you, but at the outset, you indicated you wanted to save some
yes.
time for rebuttal.
I will.
And all your time has been used up. So I think the number you see there is a number over your time, not under it. But I will, for planning purposes, I'll give you 2 minutes time extra to make a rebuttal argument.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Ann Poitz, and I represent Appellee Progressive Direct Insurance Company. As we did in the district court, we take no position on the merits of their appeal. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions, but otherwise, we are happy to submit on our briefs.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
There's nothing to rebut.
I don't know what to say. I don't know if there's anything to rebut.
you very much, Your Honor.
Well, anyway, I think this case is now submitted, and I thank both of you for appearing, helping us in your briefs, and for your positions today. With that,